Blog Talk Radio.
Meet the Met, meet the Met. Step right up and greet the Met. Bring your kitty, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life, because the Met are really stocking the ball. Knocking those home runs over the wall. East side, west side, everybody coming down to meet the M-E-T-S Met of New York town. Oh, the butcher and the baker and the people on the streets, where do they go? To meet the Met! Oh, they're hollering and cheering and they're jumping in their seats, where do they go?
Studios. I'm actually not in a studio right now. I'm actually calling in live from the ESPN studio that's going to be carrying the game tonight, the World Series 104.5 The Team, Albany, New York. You can listen to them live if you're in the Albany area. Also, 660 The Fan will carry it, as well as some of the certain serious MLB networks will carry it. This is Chris McSwiggin, and I have a very special guest host with me today, Jason Cordonnier, the writer and Mets extraordinaire, I see what I did there, from the Overtime Sports News Network. And as you may have listened, if I don't know if you pay attention to, you know, the opening of the show or not, but there's a little bit of a different opening. This was the Mets' official theme song, because the Mets are in the World Series for the first time since I was in middle school, and I guarantee you it has Jason squealing like a little kid on Christmas morning. Jason, how are you feeling today on this World
Series? I am great, man. It's a great day. The first World Series game in 15 years. We don't have to deal with the Derek Jeter Yankees, where we're not really the underdogs, because, hey, I mean, in poker, four aces always beats a royal flush. So I'm very excited, and I'm looking forward to a great World Series.
Gambling references, nice. An hour-long show today. There's supposed to be Mediation Monday. We had a little bit of a problem with our system, so we are doing it today. Only an hour-long special, because I actually have to work the game tonight. And, you know, I played that to open it, but it's not going to be all Mets today. Don't worry. It's going to be a good portion of Mets, a good spoonful of Mets, but it's not going to be all Mets. We do have a little bit of an NFL recap to start off with. And for those of you who may or may not have watched it this weekend, we had some weird NFL news. I love that music. That gets me pumped all the time. Jason, I had a question. I know you're a Giants fan, and I'm still a little tender about the loss. In a game that we really had every opportunity to win. We being the Cowboys, of course. Dustin, usually we have that connection. So the Cowboys had every opportunity to win that football game. We gifted you 17 points. Well, really 10 points we gifted you, but I'll go with 17. All of your points, for the most part, came on turnovers. We just could not get the job done. But you know what the funny thing is? We're still in the race for the division.
Absolutely.
So we'll get to that. We'll get to that. The question I had for you, though, was after watching this Monday night game, Sunday night game, rather, the Monday night game was meh, but the Sunday night game, are the Carolina Panthers the real deal? I know Dustin really seems to like them, but do you think that this team is built for longevity in this league, or are they just hot right now but they'll fizzle out?
Well, I think they're hot right now. I don't think they'll fizzle out, but I do think they need to patch up defenses with Steve Smith, because they could sure use a receiver. I mean, he was like their all-time great. So I would try to work or trade with Baltimore and try to bring them back to the fold. But other than that, they're fine. It's just offensive. The wide receiver core is still suspect, and that'll catch up to you.
And that defense is insane, too. I mean, that defense is amazing. And, you know, with Carolina now, I don't know what really it was the other night on Sunday. I don't know if it was a product more so of that Philly team or if this Carolina team was as good as they looked. Obviously, Dustin, you know, is big on them. He's huge on them. Another thing, question for you here, and looking down the line, are the Patriots going to lose a game this season? Because I really thought if they were going to, it was going to be this year, this week, against the Jets.
I think, well, it all depends. I mean, they're going to have to play, because I don't think the Bengals are going to lose more than two games. If the Bengals go into Pittsburgh this week and beat Pittsburgh, that's saying a lot right there. And they're going to want to keep pace with the Bengals still undefeated. The Broncos, which I think will win Sunday night against the Green Bay with that vaunted defense of theirs. So it's going to be the Patriots are motivated. They're going to keep winning, and they actually have a competition for like the number one seed. It's not going to be just a cakewalk. Miami might be a little challenging. The Nets Jets game might be a little challenging for them. Other than that, I could see them going 14-2.
The Patriots or the Bengals?
Both teams.
So who then?
I believe they got to play Denver. I believe the Patriots got to play Denver again. That could be a loss, and the Jets.
Okay. So the Patriots lose to the Jets in New York.
And I believe Denver. I'm not sure if that game's in New England or it's up in Denver. Let me check on that. But those are the only two possible losses. They might squeak out both. But to go 16-0 again, I mean, this offense was not as talented as that team that did it back when they had Randy Moss. But they could do it. But I think the Jets showed the blueprint, if you want to say so. I mean, if you have a pass rush, you could put pressure on them. The Giants shown that before as well. So, you know, Denver has that defense. The Bengals is a complete team. So, you know, it's in their incentive to keep on winning because they still want to keep pace for the number one seed.
You know, and I totally agree with you there. I don't just lose a game this season. I mean, I'm looking at their schedule, and I don't understand how a team that was in the Super Bowl last season has one of the easiest schedules in the league. I mean, that's a little bit, you know, disconcerting to me. It makes me a little suspect, as it was a good word you used earlier, suspect regarding that. It's a little bit of a catch-22 in a way, because this Patriots team is not supposed to lose games. But, you know, and it just seems like they've been getting a favorable matchup from the league left and right, and they're always getting bailed out somehow. Whenever they do anything wrong, it never seems like they're held accountable. And it just seems like this Patriots team is just getting gifts from Roger Goodell left and right. And now I see them. I don't see them winning the Super Bowl, but I don't really see them losing a game. I mean, I'm looking at this. That's
here.
If I pull it up here. I should have it in front of me, but I wasn't planning on doing the Patriots. There it is. Boom. Okay, Patriots schedule.
No.
So, okay. I had the Jets. Boom.
One.
Now they got the Dolphins. That's just going to be a win. But they got Dolphins, Redskins, Giants, Bills, Broncos, Eagles, Texans, Titans, Jets, Dolphins.
I mean,
really?
Man, that's a cupcake schedule down the stretch. Again, it's going to come down to the Jets game and the Broncos. Hey, I mean, I don't know what's going on in Miami, but that coach has them a little fired up and riled up. So we'll see what happens. Anything can happen on a short week. You know, that Thursday game is always, you know, if you catch somebody off guard a little bit. But then again, we're talking about Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. They're going to be well prepared.
Tell me, was it play calling that like that last? I don't know how much of the Jets Patriots game you got a chance to see. I'm actually going to be at the Jets game through work. It's going to be Jets and Jaguars actually.
Nice.
And they're going to be in a box for that game. Are you going to say that the Jets really shot themselves in the foot? I mean, they went and they got the onside kick. And then after they get the onside kick, they throw over the middle of the field with no timeout, with 10 seconds left. Like, what was that play call?
Not to mention, they didn't use any of the timeouts. They milked the clock. The Patriots did on that last drive, and Gronk was wide open in the middle. I mean, like, what were they thinking? Like, if there's anybody you don't leave open, it's Gronk. But, actually, I'll go back a little bit. That play where Brandon Marshall dropped that sure touchdown and they had to settle for 3 points, that's when I knew the Jets lost that game. Because had he gotten that touchdown, it would have been a ten point lead, and the game would have been all but over. But
who wins the East? I mean, I think it's general consensus that the Patriots have the East all but wrapped up for the AFC side of the ball. Who wins the East? For our NFC,
I'm gonna have to say by default the Giants. However, I think if Dez could come back and he's somewhat healthy, Matt Castle, you know, calms down with the turnovers and they run the ball more, they could weather this little storm. I mean, they're not out of it. They're only a game back. They have tiebreakers.
Who's this guy with the funky name? This running back.
Oh, man, I forgot.
Orleans Darkwood or something?
But Darkwood, yeah.
Where the hell did he come from?
I don't know. He was like their third back. I mean, they were desperately needing a spark from somebody. I'm really surprised how the Giants' offense seems to be digressing week by week. So they're in down in New Orleans, hey, I could easily see the Giants losing that game. So, I think honestly 8 wins will get your division. Everybody says 9. I think it's going to be 8. And you guys are in great shape because you have the tiebreaker with
we're
the Eagles
in
right
it.
Now.
I mean, we're still in his damn thing.
You're still in it, yeah.
Well, we're still in it. And a lot of people think, 2-4, they're cooked without Romo. Okay, yeah, I understand we're struggling. And I understand the Cowboys have had a, 28-17 lead at halftime against Atlanta. Blew that game. The Saints game was definitely winnable. Had we had Romo, even Castleman, feel we would have won that game. The Patriots game was just that was a disaster from the kickoff. But this game obviously was a win. So this team with this defense is very talented. And Dustin doesn't seem to understand this when I argue with him sometimes on the air about it. But November and December are the months that matter in the NFL. November and December are the months where teams get hot. They make that late playoff push. Really, I mean, September and October, unless you're winless and only have one win, it's really moot. It's a moot point. I mean, November and December are the important months if you're still in a race to get hot and get healthy and make a playoff run. And that's, I think, what the Cowboys are going to do, in my opinion, when they get Romo back, they get Dez back, because you are a Giants fan, fortunately. Giants fan, you got to tell me, you got to be able to tell me that if Romo and Dez were healthy from the onset and we had our healthy defense from the onset, we'd be running away with this division right now.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that. The Giants are winning because
Dez still seems to think we will. He was coming off the field the other day saying the East is still ours. We still run the East, blah, 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 blah. So, just killing a little bit of time here, talking some NFL here on this special World Series edition of Mediation Monday, 1 hour Tuesday show. Waiting for Phil from Long Island to call up. He's going to talk to us a little bit. Hopefully, we're going to get our Overtime Sports News Network baseball writer, Arlenis, calling us up, hopefully. So we're just kind of waiting until 5:30 here. We're going to have the two of them. Should be on the line around. But let me go another direction here real quick when it comes to the NFL. Let me ask you, have you been noticing very much any really inadequacies when it comes to the officiating so far this season?
Yeah, there's a lot of blunders with the officiating. I don't know if it's just like, I don't know if we need an extra more officials on the scene, or they need to be more in touch with the folks back in Manhattan, but maybe they need training again. But there's a lot of bad calls all around the league. I haven't seen it this bad.
Well,
in a long
what
time.
Is a catch anymore? I mean, do you even know what a catch is anymore? I mean, this whole
right. This
whole rule that Kelvin Johnson made popular, and then Dez suffered from last season, and now Golden Tate was hit with it this year. It's kind of like the refs don't even really know what constitutes a catch. You know, what constitutes a catch now, but yet they're going to try to hold players accountable, and in many cases, affect games and affect records and affect seasons for a lot of these teams.
Yeah, it's totally, totally insane. I mean, I thought a catch was, okay, the receiver catches the ball, 1-2 steps, and that's it. That's all you needed. Now it's like you have to come down with the ball. The ball can't be wobbling. It's a mess. It's a total mess now.
This is not a debate. This is a lecture. Oh, well, hello, Dustin. Just popped up out of nowhere here. No, it's one of those things. Dustin is training, actually. I don't know if he wants me putting this on the airwaves, but maybe he will. I'm actually home now. I just got home. I was live driving back from work. I'm here doing my studio. That's why my quality sounds so much better. And then I'm heading back to do this game. So that's why I changed from phone to mic. So I probably sound a little bit more clear now. But the one thing that I've noticed when it comes to the NFL and when it comes to what's going on here is it really seems to me that this league has become more entertainment driven than they have been, you know, rule driven. I mean, it seems like the controversial calls and the things like that, they're becoming more and more the case. The player safety is becoming more and more the case. This is a different game than even we're used to seeing even a few years ago. And I think NFL is going to continue to trend this way. And I think that the NFL is going to, you know, go after these exciting plays. And they're going to want, you know, more diversity and sort of change with the times. That's why they move the field goal back. We've already a couple missed field goals, missed extra points, rather, is what I meant this season. And so let me ask you, Jason, I know you were probably jumping for joy on Sunday while I was throwing things through my television, but when when Dwayne Harris returned that kick 100 yards, now usually Dan Bailey puts it out of the back of the end zone. 9 times out of 10, he's going to put it out of the back of the end zone. This one, he was kicking into the wind, kicked it a little short. Valley Ranch sources tell me he was told to kick it short to try to pin them a little deeper than the 25-yard line, and he ended up taking it to the house. Let me ask you, do you feel that because there's so many touchbacks, do you feel that they should still be able to kick off and have to kick from farther back so that it sets up returns? Or do you feel that because, like I said, 9 times out of 10, there is a touchback in the NFL, should they just, after a team scores, should they just give the other team the ball at the 20-yard line and just take the kickoff completely out of the game?
I think, you can't give them the ball at the 20-yard line. You just got to have to push everybody back a little bit. But I don't think there's much you can change about that. What you guys think?
I look at it this way. It's like in college, one of the big things, one of the big, exciting moments in college football, besides the 75 to 68 scores, besides that, it's kickoff returns. You see more kicks and punts returned for touchdowns in college than you ever will dream of seeing in the NFL. And I think really it comes down to, these are college guys, don't have the leg strength, they don't get the touchbacks as often, things like that. But in the NFL, it's like, okay, the extra point was the time when, okay, they scored, let's go get a beer, let's go to the bathroom, take a break, and come back and see the defense play. They moved that extra point back in order to keep people in front of the television and keep the interest up in, you know, the chance that he might miss it and could affect the game, and it keeps the gamble on a little bit. To do this with the kickoffs are the same thing. Every time a team goes, oh, all right, well, touchback, now we're going to go to commercial. And especially in the Super Bowl when, you know, and the playoffs, when there'll be a score, okay, there'll be a commercial, there'll be a kickoff, a touchback, and then another commercial. You know, so it's like, okay, well, just give the other team the ball in the 20 if it's going to be a kickoff 9 times out of 10, or, like you said, move it back so you have a return every time. But then you the issue with, well, guys are getting hurt more on special teams than they are in regular, and, you know, at player safety and this and that and that. So it's a big, long fiasco. I'm anxious to see what's going to happen with it, though, because the NFL has shown that they are willing to sort of adapt and adjust with the times here and change up things for, I guess, for fans' sake. So, I don't know. Who knows? We got about 40 minutes left to go here. 1 hour World Series special. Waiting on a couple of guests here. We should have Bill from Long Island at 5:30. Arlene is calling right around 5:40, talking some Mets today, talking some NFL, Dallas Cowboys, New York Giants. Let me ask you this now. You seem like sort of an NBA guy. Unfortunately, you're also a Knicks fan. Flip Saunders, the Minnesota Timberwolves coach, dies. Now, he was just diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma in June. And everybody thought, okay, well, you know, he's going to go through the chemo. He's going to sort of, you know, do the whole thing. He's not going to be with the team for a stretch of the year. And he's going to, but, you know, but they're looking at Chuck Pagano. They're looking at guys like the coach from St. John's there. His name is escaping me for whatever reason. And I'm like, all right, he's got it. Modern medicine is good enough to sort of keep him around a little bit. And, you know, I thought, okay, even if the dude does die, it's not going to be 6 months later. And boom, you know, there was a news story that came out from ESPN that said he's not going to coach the team this year. He's going to take time to get healthy. And 2 days later, they reported that he was dead. So it was a very strange turn of events. But really, so Flip Saunders' family, you know, rest in peace to him. He was a great coach, even better man. But let me ask you, this Minnesota Timberwolves team, if you look at this Timberwolves team, they are a young, upcoming team that he's built almost single-handedly in Minnesota. Do you feel that this Minnesota team has the guns to sort of make any noise in the West?
Well, they're still young. They're going to be competitive. They're going to be fun to watch. They're going to remind me. You know what they're going to remind me of? They're going to remind me of, Dustin might like this, but they're going to remind me of the 2001-2002 Nets. Young, fun to watch, very passive, very energetic, very athletic. And Kevin Garnett is going to be an extension. He's always an extension of Flip Saunders. That's part of the reason why he went back to Minnesota, was to, you know, be on the ownership committee, and Flip wanted him back to help, you know, mold the young gun. So they're going to be a very entertaining team. I expect them to compete for, like, the 7th or 8th seed.
You know, and sort of like what Jason Kidd is doing in Milwaukee, where Milwaukee's sort of that young and upcoming team in the East and is going to be competing, people think, for a lower-seeded playoff. However, with this new playoff system, you know, who really knows? Are good teams going to get screwed? I mean, are bad teams? Like who really knows? But, I mean, I'm looking at the Timberwolves roster. Kevin Garnett, obviously, he's the field general. They've got Andrew Wiggins now. Ricky Rubio is just insane dribbling the ball. Carl Anthony Towns. Zach LaVine, who jumps through the roof. You know, guys like Tyus Jones, who was the hero of the national championship this past year. Guys like Kevin Martin, Georgil Dang. I mean, you know, I'm just looking at these guys, Adrian Payne. I mean, guys that are just young, Shabazz Muhammad, Andre Miller. I mean, guys that are able to, Nick Wiggins. I mean, I'm going through this roster, and it's just, you can find guys that are good position players that are young pretty much everywhere on this roster. And, you know, that's the one thing that the doesn't have that youth movement, other than in Golden State, who obviously, you know, as you know, won the championship this season. They don't have that youth movement. They have the dinosaur Spurs, who have been, you know, that great team for years and years. They had the Lakers team, who was now they're dismantled. They're not really doing much. Clippers team was young when, you know, and then they were good. Now they're still kind of good, but they're aging. I mean, you've got these good teams in the West that are getting old by the day, and it seems like they're going back in time here, and the Minnesota Timberwolves are getting younger by the day, it seems like, which in the NBA can be a good thing and a bad thing, because you've got young, inexperienced guys who haven't been in a pressure situation like that, but yet you've also got these guys who you can build up and work with. So it really kind of depends, you know, on your opinion and your take on a youth movement and something as strong as the West and accomplish as strong as the West. But, you know, I'm looking at this Mets lineup tonight, and who's in the nonsense for the Mets?
come back
Jason,
with that?
You still with us, buddy?
I was getting a little static. Yeah, come back with that.
Oh, you got it. Okay. Who is taking the mound tonight for the Mets?
Harvey. It's going to be Harvey tonight. I'm surprised they didn't go with DeGrom. But I like the matchup. You give Harvey out there, try to steal the game one, and then you go with DeGrom, bring the hammer down with Thor in game three, Syndergaard. I like the rotation. I like the rotation a lot. The only problem I'm worried about with Kansas City is that there are a patient batting team. Like, they're going to make our pitchers work. Like, I don't expect them to go no more than six innings per game.
Kansas City Royals, they had some championship at-bats. I mean, they had some amazing at-bats in the ALCS, and they really made Toronto, who has a good pitching staff too, there was really nightmares for this Toronto pitching staff. This Royals team, like you said, they're going to make them work. They're going to try to get the pitch count up high on guys like Harvey with the arm problem. They're going to try to get DeGrom to pitch 20, 30 pitches per inning. And they're going to play small ball. The Royals aren't going to hit a lot of home runs. That's the Mets' job. So, you know, it's really going to be interesting to see. Kauffman Stadium is going to be electrified tonight. It's going to be absolutely insane atmosphere. Dustin actually just texted me. It was funny. He just messaged me. He said that the Timberwolves today reminds him of the quote-unquote baby bull back when they had Heinrich and all that. That's actually a good point, Dustin makes. Yeah, Lou Alcindor, Ben Gordon, those guys. Jason, you with me, buddy?
Oh, sorry. Hello? Sprint phone. You guys hear me now?
Yeah. You can hear that Sprint phone.
I'm sorry. Did I come back with that?
Oh,
boy.
All right. Well, did you hear what I said about the Royals and their at-bats?
Yeah, I'm scared. I'm very scared because they're patient hitters, and they will work a count. Like, they're not. See, the Mets' better matchup was Toronto because they just like the Cubs. They're power swingers. They'll strike out a lot. These guys are going to work. You know, they're going to make our pitchers work. And the only thing we have going for ourselves is that their starting pitching lineup is not that stagnant. It's really all about the bullpen. So if you have Harvey and DeGrom and the guys going six inning and the game is like 3-2 in our favor, I have more faith in, you know, our bats being more patient and working their pitches count.
Very, very true, very true. And I was saying that the Royals have a sort of – that they showed in the ALCS some championship at-bats. I mean, they really did. They showed that they have – you know, the ability to work the pitch count, get guys like Harvey who have that arm problem and innings limit rumors working up 20, 30 pitches per inning. They have guys like DeGrom who they can work 20, 30 pitches per inning and try to get these guys in trouble early. And if that happens, you know, they're going to play small ball. I mean, the Royals don't hit a lot of home runs. They're not gonna, you know, put the ball over the fence like that's what the Mets are known for. The Mets are that big ball, long ball, big boom type offense. The Royals are going to hit a lot of singles, they're going to steal a lot of bases, they're going to bunt, they're going to play strategical small ball. And that could actually not be in the Mets' favor, as it is 5:28 here, 31 minutes to go here on this special Mets edition, World Series Day edition of, well, Mediation Monday, I guess, but it's really the Mets Tuesday. And we're waiting again on Bill from Long Island. I know Dustin's listening in. There's several people listening in. So hello and thank you for making us part of your afternoon here. The reason today was bumped up, I had to work, so I'm going to be, you know, in studio from 7 to about midnight, so I'm not going to be able to do a show at any other time. The show today was supposed to be 6 to 8, lead us off, boom, right into the Mets, and now obviously that's not going to be the case. And here's the funny thing. I just got a message. We were supposed to be waiting on our baseball writer, Arlenis, supposed to be giving us a call today. And she was at the dentist, and she just messaged me, said that her mouth is asleep, so she's not going to be able to call us up and talk, and not going to be able to, you know, really give us much. I'm going to ask her if she's still calling in here. It's funny though. She's so excited about the World Series, even though it's not the Yankees. But let me throw this, Jason. Did you see the new Onion article?
No, I haven't seen it. What's going on in it?
It's about the World Series, and I know the Onion is a fake thing, but they're hilarious. It's New York, you know, it's the Mets and the Royals, and they talk about what the keys are, the key matchups are, and it's actually pretty funny. I'm going to put that up on the website, and the keys to victory for both teams. So anybody listening, go on and check that out. It's actually I got a good giggle out of the whole thing. So again, waiting on Bill from Long Island, but you know what that means, though, and I'll play this again when he gets on the line. But you know what this is? This is 30 minutes left to go in the show, 30 minutes left in this World Series edition. So this is going to be a Mets 30 minutes. So I kind of had to play this and tell me, you know, being a play-by-play guy, you listen to a little bit of my Becker calls over the weekend and things. These were the official television calls from this pro season. I'm going to ask you about this guy afterwards. So let's
go. Six to Clayton Kershaw has struck out in the first three innings. That ball's well hit to right. I mean, really well hit to right. And the Mets are on the board. Daniel Murphy waits on the 0-1, and there's a drive. Deep right field. Puig is back. That ball's gone.
Giving him another look by pitching in the stretch.
The 3-2 is driven to right. That ball is gone. Daniel Murphy has broken the tie here in the sixth. It is 3-2 Mets.
A ball and a strike. That ball's well hit to right. Did he get all of this one? Yes, he did.
That's in the air to right. That's pretty deep. That ball is gone. Daniel Murphy has struck again.
He's filling every zone. And this ball is drilled to right center field. It is deep. Man alive, Daniel Murphy has homered for the fifth straight postseason game.
Unbelievable. Must have threw that one in the strike zone. Even if you're a teammate of a guy that's hot, you start to shake your head.
The 1-1. In the air. Deep right center field. That ball is gone! Daniel Murphy has homered in six straight postseason games. Nobody's ever done it before.
Daniel Murphy, six home runs in six postseason games. Never been done before. May not ever happen again, although who knows. Do you feel he extends that streak to seven tonight? I mean, this guy is just an animal. I mean, Daniel Murphy's a complete beast, but the Royals do not give up a lot of home runs. So what's the prediction for Murphy's stat line tonight, Justin? Jason, rather. I'm so used to having Dustin on the line. Jason, what does Daniel Murphy's stat line look like?
I think Daniel Murphy's going to have a probably bat 300, two home runs, 10 RBIs for the series. I do think the key for the Mets is going to be Cespedes and all their experience with the American League bat pitching.
Is he going to hit a home run tonight, Murphy?
Game two. He's going to hit a home run in game two. Tonight he'd probably give us a double and a triple.
Okay. I just got a message here. I think he hits one tonight. I think he's just on fire right now. Although we've seen sometimes teams that have that lag. Remember, they won in four. The Royals went to six. So the Mets have had five or so days off now, which has proven when you're on a hot streak to sort of be a momentum killer. We've seen it in previous series. But Arlenis actually just got in touch with me. She's on her way back from the dentist. She can't talk, whatever. But she just messaged me and told me she's rooting for the Royals and that she hopes the Royals take it all and the Mets and blah, 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 blah. And so Arlene is from Jason. This is an early Christmas present.
It doesn't matter what you think.
The
again, boxed up and presented from Jason there to you, Arlenas. Also, Bill from Long Island. Jason, tell me this, and I'm waiting for him to call in. I know he's got a busy home life, so he may not be able to make it exactly today, but he told me that he's rooting for the Royals in this series as well. And I said, well, why is that? You're a New York guy. You live on Long Island. You live in Mets country, basically, Mets territory down there in Long Island. And I said, you know, I know you're a Yankee fan, but come on. I mean, it's New York. And he says, all right, let me put it this way. He goes, the last time the Mets, you know, back in 86, I was like, yeah, okay. And he goes, yeah, with the Bill Buckner thing? I'm like, yes, I remember. He goes, I was actually rooting for the Red Sox. And I'm like, that is blasphemous, a complete blasphemous coming from a New Yorker. And so he's not, you know, obviously on the Mets bandwagon either. So Bill from Long Island.
It doesn't matter what you think.
Because we have a very special Mets edition here today. And again, I do have a Mets fan on the phone. I also went to school with a kid who was a big Mets fan. Matt Bodie is his name. He's got all his Mets gear donned today. His Facebook has been blowing up my news feed with it. Jason, now, let me ask you. I know you're a fan. I really do. And, you know, I know that a lot of the times fans can be biased and fans can be, you know, sort of looking through that microscope a little bit and not really focusing on the rest of it. But try to be as realistic as possible here. Do you feel the Mets win this series, or is this going to be a very, very difficult mountain for them to climb?
Honestly, you know, it's one of those things that you're always happy that your team makes it, but then you have to hit the realization, like, holy crap, they actually made it. They're in the World Series. I think Kansas City is going to be a buzzsaw. I think they're hungry. I mean, they were, what, three innings away from winning the whole thing last year? They just ran into a buzzsaw in Berkheim.
Yeah. And they actually, there was that call, should they send Billy Butler from third? I know they don't want to get a guy thrown out the plate, but he doesn't send him, and he ends up getting the out, and the whole big thing. And then, when you run into a guy like they ran into last year as a closer, it's always going to be tough. But the Royals, like I said, the Royals will have that opportunity to be in special company. They have the opportunity to be the beginning of the Buffalo Bills of the NFL, go to two consecutive World Series and lose them. They have that opportunity.
I think the Rangers did that. The Rangers did that a few seasons ago, too. They went to two and they lost both.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I feel the Mets have a shot. I feel the Mets really, really do. They're still doing the 2-3-2 setup. So I feel like if the Mets take one game in Kansas City, they can win it at home. We've seen the road team win the last couple of years. I think that they can definitely get it done, the Mets. I think that they have the ability with the pitching staff to get it done, but the Royals are going to be a tough, tough out. That is for sure.
I'll tell you this, though. The Mets it has to be done in five games. It can't go seven. I don't give them a shot.
You think the Royals have the edge in seven?
I think they have the edge in seven because Harvey, it's kind of – I mean, the thing about those innings, he's been pitching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at some point, that's going to catch up to us. It might be tonight. It might be game five. So, you know.
Well, you look at two of those guys with inning limits and with arm problems and things like that. Look what happened with Arrieta in the Cubs. I mean, he has completely imploded in that last game. And Arrieta never pitched as bad as I've seen him pitch in that game. And so a lot of the times with short rest in series that are as intense as this, with teams that work the count the way that the Royals do, it could be, you know, the Royals' small ball and the Royals' ability to make contact and hit a lot of foul balls and work the counts and steal bases and things like that. It might be the downfall to a crazy good pitching staff in New York. It definitely could be. Dustin just called the upset, by the way, tonight. NBA, for anybody who's watching, NBA begins at 8 o'clock tonight. First game, Detroit and Atlanta. The game is going to be on television, at least in my area anyways, Cleveland and Chicago. He's calling the Bulls with the upset over the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight in Chicago. So I all know how he feels about Cleveland. Also, then this Bulls team goes on to play the Brooklyn Nets after that. Who do you Knicks got first?
I don't think the Bulls. I don't think the Bulls are going to be as good as people think this year, but God.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Actually, your Knicks got the Milwaukee Bucks first. I mean,
but you know what? I want this to be archived. I guarantee you something about the Knicks. They will trade Carmelo Anthony by the All-Star break to either Chicago, Miami, or Houston. Remember what you heard of here first. They will trade him, they will get some assets, and they will build around what they have.
And you've heard it here first. So Dustin is usually the one who's known for calling things and making claims on the air. So now Jason, with one of his claims here, he says that the Royals will win it in seven if it goes to seven, and he is saying that the Knicks will trade Carmelo Anthony to a contender for assets. Do you think that the Milwaukee Bucks, are a sleeper team this season? At least 40 wins?
I think they're still another year away, but I think they're getting so much smoke blown up their rear end that they're going to feel themselves a little bit, and a team like – I see them being fifth in the East, same position they were last
fifth?
Year. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. They got Jason Kidd. He's a Coach of the Year candidate, wouldn't he be? Or do you think? I mean, if he turns this Bucks team around and if they, you know, if they end up making the playoffs, winning a series, because that's the thing, they've made the playoffs last couple of years, they just haven't won a series. If they can end up winning a playoff series, you think Jason Kidd could be Coach of the Year?
He could. If he win a playoff series, I mean, it was a bad matchup for them against the Bulls last year. If they would have played someone like Washington or someone like Toronto where they have the rebounding advantage and they even have the advantage of the guards, like their guards are tall. Like everybody on the Bucks, I don't know if you guys noticed it, but everybody in the Bucks is above 6'9", which is incredible. So they caught a bad matchup last year with the Bulls. But I just think that the East is a lot better than what people think it is. I think, you know, Miami and Indiana did not make the playoffs last year. Those are two teams you have to automatically vault into the Washingtons, the Toronto, the Atlanta, the Bulls, the Cavs. So I think the East is going to be a little bit better than people think. And teams like Milwaukee and Boston, who were surprises last year, they're going to have to work a little harder to maintain their spot in the Eastern Conference.
Arlenis just gave me a message. She told me she is home. She is listening. And she is picking the Kansas City Royals. Well, actually, no. Let me ask her here. Again, she can't talk. She was at the dentist today and everything. So let me just ask her quick. I know she's rooting for the Royals. Arlenis, if you are listening, which you claim you are, shoot me over a message real quick and let me know. I know you're rooting for the Royals, but I to get off your soapbox for a minute like I had Jason do and tell me who wins the series. Not who you're rooting for, but who wins the series. And we will wait on her response here as she's going to send me over a message as to who she thinks is going to win. And also, how many games? How many games does it go, and who wins this series? Jason seems to think if it goes to seven, it's going to be the Royals. Mets can do it in five, which if they do win it in five, will be in Citi Field, which will be huge. So, would that be the first Mets World Series win at home?
I just think Harvey is going to be the factor. If Harvey doesn't give us a strong outing tonight, it's going to mess up the rotation for Game 5. They might have to look into going Nice or Cologne and putting them back in. I just don't trust Harvey. And Collins is really gambling by putting him to start Game 1. Maybe he thinks Harvey can steal one and then go hard for try to steal Game 2 with DeGrom. I don't know. But, I'm a little worried about Harvey pitching tonight.
Who is the best pitcher on this staff?
DeGrom. All year has been DeGrom.
It's been DeGrom with that awesome hair he's got, huh?
Yeah, there you go.
Tell me now, who is this Familia guy?
Well, he's the closer. Actually, the Mets closer actually was suspended for the whole year with the whole PED, so he came out of nowhere. He was a blessing in disguise.
Okay, I was going to say, I hadn't really heard much about him, and then all of a sudden I see him just dominating games in the eighth and ninth inning, so I wasn't exactly sure, you know, where he came from. I don't follow the Mets as well as maybe I should. So.
And he's also one of those guys where, like, you know, he's been well above expectation. Because remember, he's filling in. He reminds me of more like when Mariano used to set up for a Wetland. So he's doing a great job for us right now, and it's only a matter of time before that, you know, something happens. And like I said, I'm really scared of the Royals. They're a patient batting team. They're hungry. They were just a few innings away from the championship last year, so I don't expect it to be a cakewalk like Chicago was. And
well,
then the Braves
just got back to me, and she said that she thinks 7 games. She thinks it'll be 7. She says she thinks that the Royals will win. It'll be 7 games. She says that the Royals have the better pitching, but she wants the series to go 3-3, so they get an epic game 7. So she thinks Royals in 7.
My heart says Mets in 5, but I think it's going to be Royals in 7.
Which would be winning Kauffman Stadium, which would be gigantic for that organization. Do you feel the Mets? Do you feel that the Mets are going to put up a lot of runs like they did? This has been a Mets team that has scored anywhere from 3 to 8 runs in almost every game in the postseason. Do you think it's the Royals? They win a couple of 2-1 games, things like that, or is it going to be another offensive show-out?
I think tonight could be a 3-2 game. I think tomorrow could be also a 2-1, 3-2, 4-3 game. I don't expect a lot of runs. They're going to be very low runs being scored. I expect Kansas City to get their runs mostly in the 6th, 7th innings. The Mets will probably try to jump early, but then once that's the thing. The Kansas City has an amazing bullpen. So that middle relief for there is outstanding. That's going to be our problem. Our batter's going to have to be real patient. We have help with, you know, Cespedes being from the American League, with Grandison being from the American League, with Murphy being in the zone right now. Hopefully David Wright wakes up and, you know, sees the moment. And,
My apologies. I actually had somebody on hold here, and I was on a different screen looking up stats. I don't know how long you've been on hold, but we have a 516 area code. We have a 983 number. That is Bill from Long Island, who had some choice words about the Mets when I talked to him earlier in the week. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Just a World Series Tuesday. We only had about an hour-long show today because I actually have to work the game tonight. We were talking a little bit about the Mets. Arlenas thinks the Royals win it in 7. Jason seems to think that if it goes to 7, the Royals have the edge. But, of course, he's a Mets fan, so he'll be shooting for the Mets. I don't know if you heard the intro to the show or not, but I'm going to close the show with it. I want you to listen to it. But the Mets are sweeping New York right now. There's Mets fever everywhere, and I know that just makes you sick, doesn't it?
Yeah, it pretty much does. They're not going to sweep. I'm going to hope history repeats itself, where you have this playoff with the Mets haven't played in 7 days, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that it holds the form where the hot team goes red hot and they sail through the league championship series and then they wait and wait and wait and they cool down. So I'm not going to give a prediction because I'm not going to be biased. I'm going to be biased. I'm not going to be objective, so I'm not going to say the Mets are going to win. But their starting pitching, obviously, is scary. I think their bats will cool off, and I'm hoping the game comes down to a two-inning game at the back end. I respect Familia. I even drafted him in my fantasy league for what that's worth, and he's had a phenomenal year. He's had a Mariano-esque type playoff run. But, God, I'm really hoping for the Royals to come through since they were really one hit away from winning the World Series last year. And I really just can't stand with all the Met fans really getting my craw. So I'm rooting for the Royals.
You live in Long Island. You live on Long Island. You live in Mets Haven. I mean, that's Mets Islanders territory out there.
Yes.
Are you in your daily life, are you this past week getting a lot of, seeing a lot of Mets love and getting a lot of people rubbing the orange and blue in your face here? Or what's going on?
Yeah, a little bit. It hasn't been rubbing the blue and orange in the face. It's really a lot of anti-Yankee sentiment, which really is not fair because, you know, the Mets haven't done anything in, like, what? They went to the World Series in 2000. They haven't done anything in a long time. And I just keep hearing it, and I can't deal with it, to be honest with you.
Now, didn't you mention that in the Bill Buckner Mets series, as a Yankee fan, you were rooting for the Red Sox?
1,000%. In the 10th inning, I even turned on my VCR just to tape the last three outs to have the Mets lose. I don't want to go bore the fans with the stories of why I hate the Mets so long, but it would be about a 10-minute dissertation, and it would
We can always have you call in when we do a show next Monday, and we'll give you a little bit more time to tell the story.
Yeah, I'll take a little more time, and I'll show you the story why I really, truly hate the Mets, and a lot of it has to do with Mr. Bobby Valentine.
Oh, okay, Bobby Valentine. All right.
I'll give you a little tease for next week.
He was one of those guys who, he was loved and hated in New York. I mean, you know, he was one of those guys who was definitely a character, for sure, in New York. And you know, Mets fans love him. Some people do. Some people don't like him. So who knows? Jason, before I ask you real quick your opinion on Mr. Valentine, Arlene brings up a good point here. She's messaging me. She says that Volquez has dominated the Mets, but that was before Cespedes got there. Also, Cueto is a National League pitcher who's been successful against the Mets in the past. So the Royals have a little bit of weapons, secret weapons, kind of in their back pocket here. So with 8 minutes left, let me just ask you real quick, Jason, two things. One about the Royals pitching, sort of knowing the Mets a little bit coming in. And also, were you a Bobby Valentine fan?
I was a Bobby V fan. I mean, he did bring excitement to Shea for a little bit. I mean, some of his antics, of course, they wore out quickly, but I was a fan.
Okay. And what about the former National League pitchers, who both of which have been, you know, the Achilles heel for the Mets throughout the past couple of years, both of which are now pitching with a KC on their hat? What about those two guys, Volquez and Cueto?
Did we lose him?
I think with your Sprint phone. Jason, you got to get a microphone, buddy, or Verizon, one of the two.
Well, I'll chime in, and I'll kind of disagree a little bit. Volquez has bounced around a little bit from team to team, and his problem has never been his stuff. It has always been his control. If you look at his walks per nine innings for his career, he's really high. He's in the 4-5 range, and that's always been his issue. He's susceptible to one bad inning, and I don't care what kind of track record he has. This is a World Series game,
and
it's
totally
a different lineup now and a different scenario. As for Cueto, I really think he's pitching hurt. So his velocity. He had one good start against Toronto where his velocity was up for the first time in a real long time, but it's not there. I think he's got a shoulder and elbow issue. It's something like that, but he's gotten through.
I totally agree. Like you said, it's a World Series. I mean, big stakes. It's a different Mets lineup than what they used to experience before. And again, I just think that the runs are going to be at a premium. No one's going to score more than 5 runs a game. So it's just going to be pitch for pitch, and we'll see how everybody deals with that.
So in other words, it's going to be a boring World Series.
It's going to be a defensive World Series.
I hate pitching. I want home runs. I want long balls. I want excitement. I hate defensive baseball. At least from a fan, anyway.
Don't worry. Don't let the pitching scare you off a little bit. I think there'll be a couple games in this series where you might see an 8-6 game or something like that. Kansas City is too deep to not load up on have a beginning. Maybe even game one against the Dark Knight this evening. I think one, and then obviously in game four, I kind of like the Mets' chances with Chris Young on the mound. Obviously, they know him, so that's the game they're going to have to win 8-7. The Kansas City win that game.
I don't know what to expect from Harvey tonight at all, and that's a little alarming.
I definitely want to see. You know what I want to see more so than I want to see offensive defensive baseball. I want to see the Royals wear those powder blue uniforms again, the full powder blues.
You'll probably see it, maybe not game one, but you might see it game two. What I would like to see for the first time in a long time is the Mets getting a deficit early, because they've been jumping on their opponents, even going back to the L.A. series. They've won five in a row, and they've been scoring. They score a first inning run the last five games.
Yeah,
if they didn't, it really seems like they do. And I'd like to see Kansas City jump out to a quick lead tonight and have the Mets play from behind for once in 2 weeks.
You know, and that is actually what makes championship teams. I mean, how do you face adversity and how do you, you know, you come from behind and win games, especially in situations, you know, like this, in a World Series where it's all on the line. In a way, I kind of want to see that just because I want to see how the Mets would respond to that sort of situation. But, you know, I don't really have a vested interest in this game. I mean, I'm doing this show for Jason because he's co-hosting with me and he's a big Mets guy. And I got a lot of Mets fans who I know from up here who are listening. That's really the only reason I chose to do it today. But I don't have a vested interest in this World Series at all. I don't really care. I want to see a good World Series. That's basically it.
That works. And as long as the title goes to Kansas City, I'll be really, really happy.
Well, the title, if the city field could hang their first championship banner, I'll be very happy.
And let me ask you this, Jason. This is going to sound, I actually just thought about it in my head before I said it. It's actually going to sound really, really weird. But what do you have on right now in terms of, like, apparel? I mean, are you wearing any Mets stuff right now?
Oh, absolutely. I have on my Mets, win the pennant. I have on that shirt, and I have on my World Series cap. Blue and orange on deck all over. Even have
now,
blue orange laces.
You got the orange shoelaces. Did you like the Mets black hats when they had the black with the blue brim?
I didn't like it too much. I didn't like it too much.
No, you like the old school blue with the orange.
I like the old school blue and orange. Stuff they wear now is great. The more they implement Mr. Met, it's great. It's fantastic.
Game one, Mets wear the pinstripes or they wear the blue jersey? Game one in City Field, I mean.
They're going to wear the blue jerseys. They're going to wear the blue jerseys.
Okay. And now, is there any sort of thing behind these blue jerseys? Like, I mean, since when have they been wearing the blues? I thought they were always copying the Yankees and wearing the pinstripes.
Well, I guess they varied off. They went off course this year, you know, when they would just want to attach the younger viewers and the younger fans. They just want to break away from that, being the Yankee stepbrothers, you know?
They've got, like, 12 different uniforms. It's hard to keep up.
That is true. They are the Oregon of baseball, it seems like. So
they're way up there. They really should. Go ahead.
Oh, I say I only got about a minute and a half left here, but what were you saying?
I said they should really wear their cream color ones at home. That's their best looking jersey at home. It doesn't, you know, when you mix and match tops, you're kind of like a goofy organization.
I like the Darryl Strawberry one, the pinstripes with the stripes down the shoulders.
Where he wears number 39 instead.
To each their own. So in the spirit of tonight and in the spirit of Bill from Long Island finally getting on to the bandwagon here and calling us up, we are ending the show the same way we began.
Oh, my God.
The Mets. Step the Mets. Bring your kids. Bring your wife.